This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
See Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is brought to you by Burger King, Cleft of the Rock Foundation, the Cleveland Clinic, the Digital Transformation Unit, the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Raw Star Assurance. You're not alone. All up if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to ZLive. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad that you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I trust and hope that you are doing well. If you want to give us a call today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM, you can call us on 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316, 325-4316. So you can you can text me on 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. That's 439-3043. I trust and hope that you had a wonderful weekend, and those of you who are fathers, that you enjoyed your Father's Day celebrations. I know I did. I found it quite refreshing, and so I can't complain all about Father's Day. I know nobody made me no crab and rice. I mean, my mother made crab and rice, but I can't eat it. I can't eat a lot of things, so I had a very strict diet. But I had my kids around me, and that made a world of difference for sure. I trust to know that you had a similar experience where you were. All right. So I was listening, reading the news, and I noticed that the Minister of Immigration, the Honorable Keith Bell, was indicating that they are still trying to work through some procedural matters related to those persons who are born to a Bahamian and a foreigner who is unmarried but born in the Bahamas, as to how to deal with them. And from what I understand the minister to be saying, the minister says, well, these people do not have to come to immigration to register, because that's the truth. The Privy Council has settled the issue in the matter of law insofar as their citizenship are concerned. They are citizens of the Bahamas. They don't have to be registered as citizens of the Bahamas. They are citizens of the Bahamas. So he says they don't have to come to the Department of Immigration any. Then he said that, but, you know, if they want a passport, they can go directly to the passport office and apply for passport office. But then the question becomes one of what does the passport office require in order for them to get the passport? He said, he indicated that we have a number of these people's application before us. A number of them have applications for registration before us. And he thinks that they should expedite those applications and register them. That way they can go to the passport office and there won't be a problem, as opposed to if they don't come to immigration and go to the passport office, they might end up with a problem. Well, so he says that they're still trying to work through that. The passport office has a notice that says they're still waiting on guidance from the Attorney General's office on this. And I think there is a fair amount of rationality attached to what the minister is saying, but I have some concerns. I do have some concerns. First of all, insofar as being a Bahamian is concerned, these people have no distinction between them and the rest of us who like to call ourselves born, bred Bahamians. None under law, none whatsoever. These people do not require, they are not required to apply for registration to be a citizen. They are not. Just as I, Shivago Sean Lang, and so many others, was not required to apply for citizenship or registration of citizens. And when you meet the terms of the Constitution and the immigration, the nationality provisions of our laws, you have no requirement to apply to be registered as a citizen. You are not required to be naturalized or anything of that nature. You are a Bahamian. Now, I am 55 years old, and I've never had to prove to anybody I'm a Bahamian, saving and except for when I went to do things that required that certification. For instance, when I went for a passport. For instance, when I ran for public office. Only in those instances, every other time I lived in the Bahamas was a Bahamian, told people I was a Bahamian, and nobody could say anything about it otherwise. And I could, a Bahamian, could go in their entire life and not require a passport. They could decide, I'm never traveling abroad, so I don't need a passport. They could go their entire life and decide, I'm not going to vote. They could go their entire lifetime and decide, I am not going to run for public office. They could go an entire lifetime and not have to do anything that requires them to prove that they are a citizen. And they will be a citizen still. So passport don't prove you're a citizen. You're a citizen first, and then you get a passport. One comes before the other. So my concern is, in the way I'm hearing this talked about, we can create, if not in substance, a psychological form of discrimination against such persons as to make them somehow different than ourselves. And I just don't get that. So let me give you an example, right? If you went to the passport office, you and I went to the passport office to apply for passport, my mother did, when she went to apply for passport for us. What was required when we went to the passport office? When I did it, even as an adult, they required my birth certificate. They required my parents' birth certificate. That's what they required, both. And then, by virtue of that, and then their birth certificate, they put me a passport. So if you are a person whose parent is non-Bahamian, one of the parents, the other parent is Bahamian, and you were born in the Bahamas, and you go to the passport office, what should the passport office ask you for? Could I have the birth certificate of the parent who you say is a Bahamian? And if they need, I think maybe they need their parents' birth certificate, however that works, then you just need their birth certificate. And however that works, once they get the things that's necessary to establish that the parent was a Bahamian, then that person gets a passport. Period. Right? Now, if they say, but I don't have my parents' birth certificate. Now, under ordinary circumstances for me, Shivago Lang, not those people who come under this ruling of the Privy Council, but me, Shivago Lang, you, who all of us have gone and applied for a passport, if we went to the passport office and were required and did not have a birth certificate, what would they do? They'd get an affidavit. Now, I agree 100%. in this day and age, maybe because of fraud related to affidavits, because those persons supplying the affidavit, too many of them have not been honest in their dealings, you are suspect of that. So you say, okay, but I'm sorry, I cannot use an affidavit anymore. You now have to have some proof of paternity, right? You have to have some proof of paternity. So, okay, and so you require a paternity test. Here is my challenge. My challenge is, if you require a paternity test for them, in that kind of circumstance, it should be required for every single person who approaches the passport office without the birth certificate of the parent. Everyone. So that there isn't a distinction between them and us. Every single one who is unable to supply such a document in those circumstances should be required to do so. Not just them. Why? Why are they special? Why? Because if I, who didn't fall under the ruling of the Privy Council, but said that I was my father's Bahamian, what would I be required to do? If an affidavit is good enough in my circumstance, it should be good enough in theirs. If it is not good enough in my circumstance, it should not be good enough in theirs. And if they require paternity test, so should I. That's my concern about how this is being talked about. When you are trying to create a society that is cohesive, unified, you don't create discriminatory circumstances for people who under the law fit in the same circumstances. So I wasn't quite sure. And secondly, the minister said, they should process those people's applications before them to make it easier for them to go to the passport office. If the Privy Council's ruling gave me citizenship because I fell under the law, I wouldn't want you to register me as no citizen under no naturalization law. I wouldn't do that. Why would I do that to myself? Because that has implications. Naturalized citizens can't pass on their citizenship. Why would I do that to myself? I would not do that. I wouldn't do it at all. Right now, you say, what if I go to the passport office, they require a paternity test, but my father's not alive? My father's not alive. Well, I would say, you could decide what level of verification you would like to have, whether that is an affidavit or what have you, and test the affidavits to the extent you can and prosecute JPs and them, people who produce the affidavit, who lie in on them, prosecute them. But you can't deny, you don't want to be in a circumstance where you're denying a citizen a right. But by the same token, you don't want to create a system subject to fraud, you know? So I understand that dilemma. I understand that dilemma. You, somebody says, well, my father was a citizen. Father's dead. The mother's dead. So who do you believe? How do you believe them? I suggest to you that we have many, many things we do in this country that we use to verify things, and they are not verified by no paternity tests or genetic information and the like. And if we have sufficient circumstances in which we do that, well, how about this? So that person, that child, is not denied this right. This text says, the problem now is birth certificate proving where you and your parents are born. This is what I am hearing is the challenge. Well, no, that's not a challenge, because if a birth certificate is issued by the relevant government agency, which is the Registrar General's Department, unless there is reasonable suspicion of fraud, it has to be accepted as a valid document of proof. Right, so what's the problem? You get your birth certificate from the Registrar's General's Department. If they produce it, what's the problem? This says, without a father, paternity can still be done with a grandmother. Yes, certainly you can establish paternity through, I imagine, other family members, perhaps, right? So there are still means to do it. I want people to understand that what I am saying more than anything else is we cannot create a situation, and please understand me, this is don't make this about paternity test, no paternity test, or so forth. That's not the issue. This is about whatever procedure is required in those circumstances to prove the citizenship of a parent should apply to every single one of us if we fall in the category of not having birth certificates. Very same thing. That's the point. I don't want to hear that, well, these are the people who fell under the rules of the Privy Council. All the Privy Council ruled was they are Albanians. I said, the Albanians. The only issue now is, if they would like a document that is only issued to a Bahamian, one has to prove that parent's paternity. And I'm saying that it should be the same thing for us. Do not create a scenario in which these are them kind of Bahamians and we are another kind of Bahamians, because that is not what the law says. That's not what the Privy Council ruled. They are Bahamians. You could talk about a naturalized Bahamian, and then you could talk about a non-naturalized Bahamian. They fit in the non-naturalized. They are not naturalized. They are actualized Bahamians. They are Bahamians. That's the point. Now, the minister says that they are still working on them. There is no greater privilege in a country than citizenship. It is the highest office in the land. Why? Because it's the first office. You cannot be prime minister if you are not first occupying the office of citizen. You cannot be a cabinet minister if you're not first occupying the office of citizen. You cannot be a member of parliament if you're not occupying the office of citizen or a senator. So anything that is a prerequisite to something else becomes more important in the scheme of things than that thing. That's why the sovereign power of the state belongs to the people. Who are the people? The collective office holders of the citizenry of the country. I say that to say, if we believe that citizenship is the highest office in the land, we will find the means expeditiously to settle this matter. And what do we mean settle it? It doesn't have to be settled for anybody who's got a proof of their parents' paternity, their parents' citizenship. Nobody. That they're all good. They're straight. Once you could prove that that's my parent, he was a Bahamian, she was a Bahamian, even though they weren't married to my other parent, you're straight. This is only about people who cannot provide those clear pieces of evidence of the citizenship of their Bahamian parent. Those are the only people. Now, the question is, how many folk fall in that category? Is it 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%, 50%? Maybe if we understood that, we might get a little bit more handle on the extent of the problem, because if it's not an extensive problem, let's stop talking about this as if these people are some special differentiated people requiring some special treatment, because they do not. They are citizens of the Bahamas. It's Texas High Chicago. While I understand that there should be measures in place, I almost feel like this is more stalling. Meanwhile, the Bahamians are being disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't immigration have already, at the very least, figured out how this would work prior to the ruling, with the thought that the Privy Council may have ruled this way? Further, if they are Bahamians, should just like me or you, then whatever rule or requirement that applies to us apply to them all? That's exactly my point. Exactly my point. I mean, and that's really the point. That's my point, is what is the rule? Like, what is the current rule? The current rule is an affidavit. Well, we now decide an affidavit is too fraudulent. We now decide, first of all, you know what? When we come back, we can talk about this affidavit discussion. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. We'll be back after this break.
Take a stand.
Water and Sewage Corporation wishes to advise the public, its customers, and the residents of Wilton Street off Mackey Street, inclusive of side corners, that there may be an interruption to their water supplies between the hours of 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. on June 12, 2023, for a total of 6 weeks to perform new main installation on Wilton Street. During this period, there may also be road closures and detour around the work areas. Motorists are asked to avoid this area between the hours of 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. The corporation apologizes for any inconvenience this may cause and appreciates your support as they work to improve their level of service.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails. And that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good for nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair, you say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there cause the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police won't find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it'll go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried it the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid, I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Chicago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232. That's 323-6232 or 325-4316. 325-4316. You can text us at 422-4796. That's 422-4796. Or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. So we're talking about the Minister Keith Bell's indication that immigration is still working on how to deal with these issues related to persons who fall under the recent Privy Council ruling regarding citizenship, being born to a Bahamian or non-Bahamian parent born in the Bahamas. the crew that they are Bahamians. Not that they are entitled to be registered as Bahamians, not that they have to wait until they turn 18 and then apply. No, but they are Bahamians. And so now they go to the passport office. The passport office is saying they're still waiting for procedures, I mean, guidance from the Attorney General's office regarding the matter. Firstly, I could only see a small subset of issues that the passport office is waiting on guidance for these people. And that has to do with the people who do not have birth certificates and other means to prove that their parent was a Bahamian, because you don't need any guidance from the Attorney General's office on that matter, because for those people, the law has been established. That's settled law in the Bahamas now. Okay, the highest court in the country, the highest court that this country has ruled on that matter. You're a Bahamian, you were born in the Bahamas, one of your parents is not a Bahamian, the other parent is a Bahamian. If you can prove that the other parent is Bahamian, you are a citizen and you are entitled to a passport, period. Now, if you are not you cannot, by virtue of birth certificate and that, prove that your parent was a Bahamian, then what is the rule for you? And my point is, the rule should be the same thing for you as it has been for every other person up to this point. What was that rule? Affidavit. Sworn affidavit. You say, but they're abusing our affidavits now. There are too many of them are fraudulent. Okay, but let me ask you a question. Please. If we have had too many fraudulent affidavits, when was the last time you heard of anyone who prepared such an affidavit having been prosecuted? Let me ask it again. Since we have so many fraudulent affidavits, and therefore it makes and creates a situation where we can no longer rely on affidavit, I'm asking you, when was the last time that you heard of anyone being prosecuted for falsifying an affidavit? And since it's so many of them, shouldn't there be many such prosecutions? Because for me to know that an affidavit was falsified means that I have proof of the fact that it was falsified. And if I have proof of the fact that it was falsified, that means that someone broke the law. And if someone broke the law, someone should be prosecuted. Where has been anybody, please? You're listening to the show today. The numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. The text number is 422-4796 and the WhatsApp number is 439-3043. Please tell me the last time that you heard of anyone being prosecuted for falsifying an affidavit. Please text me. Please call me. Since we can no longer rely on them because there's been too much of that, please tell me. Am I suggesting it's not happening? My point is, you can't be telling me that it's so prevalent so as to make affidavit non-trustworthy, but the state has done nothing to prosecute the violator. Why do we prosecute anybody? Why do we prosecute murderers? Why do we prosecute rapists? Why do we prosecute people who steal and rob, commit fraud? Why do we do that? If you can swear an affidavit, which is a legal document, and proof exists of same, but no one is prosecuted. That can't be rational. That can't be. So if we have not prosecuted people for falsifying affidavit, then there should be no reason for us to now start questioning the bona fide of an affidavit. Because on the face of it, that's why we do affidavit, because we are saying the people that we use to do the affidavit, these justices, these lawyers, these priests and all these people, they are supposed to be people who we trust. And you trust people until you can't trust them no more. And you don't stop trusting people unless there's proof that they have been untrustworthy. if an affidavit is good enough for me, it has to be good enough for the folk who now are citizens by virtue of the fact that the law has been clarified as to their being citizens. What is the problem? If one day we want to change the process to say, no, we'll no longer accept affidavit, we'll accept it only under these circumstances, we could change who could swear an affidavit. We can change who can supply an affidavit. Now, we can do those things, right? But we shouldn't put hurdles in the way of people experiencing the full privileges and benefits of their citizenship. We should not do that. We should seek every avenue possible, just as we have in times past. We said, oh, you don't have a birth certificate, so you don't have a birth certificate. Okay, well, we'll take an affidavit from your priest, your affidavit from your mommy, your grammy, your daddy, your uncle, and so forth and so forth. We'll take those. And if you could prove the people them lie, you prosecute them. You know what a high-profile prosecution of a falsified affidavit would do in the Bahamas? Put every JP on notice, you better catch yourself. Put every notary on, you better catch yourself. Every priest, every pastor, every bishop, you better catch yourself. But if we're not going to do anything about it, then we have to assume that they are okay. And if they are okay, why hold up these people who are trying to realize the fullness of their citizenship? See, if you have never been in that situation, I've never, but I talk to people who have. If you've never been in that situation, you have no idea how frustrating that is. You have no idea how demeaning that is. You have no idea. And I'm saying, I'm not asking you to be a beating heart. All I'm saying is, unless we can substantiate that a means of doing something is no longer credible, why stop using that means? Let the people live. Let the people live. What say ye? No, I have nobody's texted me to say, oh yeah, they prosecuted people on a falsified affidavit. The other day, or the day before the other day, or some years ago, no, nobody, not a text coming in, not one text, no call coming. But these affidavits are not reliable. How is that possible? How is it possible? This is Eli, I'm Shivago Lang, your host. We're going to pay our respects to our great sponsors, and after we're done, we'll be back. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand. Come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm, let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
Wednesdays just got a whole lot better. Introducing Whopper Wednesdays at Burger King Nassau. Get a flame-grilled Whopper for only $5.50, including VAT. Yes, you heard that right. This Wednesday, you can indulge in the classic flame-grilled Whopper you love, made your way for only $5.50. Stop by your favorite Burger King Nassau location this Wednesday and enjoy a Whopper for only $5.50. Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
Are you a parent looking to strengthen your family's bond and raise confident, resilient children? Look no further. Cleft of the Rock Foundation presents the Parenting on Purpose Weekend Retreat, June 30th to July 2nd. Immerse yourself in the serene beauty of Pelican Bay Resort in Freeport, the Bahamas. Picture yourself surrounded by turquoise waters and palm trees. It's the perfect setting for an unforgettable and transformative experience. from the renowned Dr. Bob Barnes, Parenting on Purpose is a comprehensive training program designed to equip you with practical tools and strategies to raise happy, confident children. Dr. Barnes' expertise and passion for families will inspire and empower you. Register today at cleftoftherockfoundation.org or email cleftoftherockfoundation@gmail.com to secure your spot at this life-changing retreat. Limited spots are available, so don't miss out on this incredible opportunity. Join us for the Parenting on Purpose Weekend Retreat at Pelican Bay Resort in Freeport, the Bahamas. Which one family at a time.
My business couldn't survive without my credit card machine from Fidelity.
It's fast, convenient, and my clients love it.
My sales increase, and I can track my earnings.
Get your credit card machine from Fidelity today.
Call 356-7764. Fidelity,
we're good for you.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live, I'm Shibago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today. We have a caller on the line. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Lang.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm all right, sure. You know, happy Father's Day. You know, it go. But, the thing is, if sometimes you don't see evidence of something, it doesn't mean that it don't exist, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know that, right? Like, sometimes the police don't find evidence, but that doesn't mean the person isn't guilty. If a person wins a court case, that doesn't mean he isn't guilty. Now, concerning the affidavits, right?
Yeah, but hold on, though. It means that they are not guilty before the law, period. Didn't mean that they didn't do the crime, but they're not guilty. They are innocent.
Because lack of evidence, but also interference with witness, et cetera, et cetera. There are many reasons. So, as far as the affidavits are concerned, right?
No, hold on. Please. Because, you know, on this show, I try to help people, right? And I don't want to make a distinction in anything. Yes, a person could have done something, but if you are not convicted before the court, you are not guilty of that crime before the law.
Yes, legally.
Yeah, but that's what matters. Legally. That's what matters.
Yeah, I know that's what matters, but not before God. But I want to dwell. Yeah, yes, but I want to get on with the affidavits, right?
God is not on the planet judging us at this time.
Yeah, good thing God didn't mix up in politics, right? But I just want to get something with the affidavits.
You got that right.
I want to get something with the affidavits, Mr. Lang. So, yeah. C. Allen was talking about this biometric, like citizen digital ID or whatever, right? And so when these are implemented, so with AI and the digital paradigm, a lot of things would be exposed. So I am supposed to be naive to believe that if I see a justice of the peace off on an overwhelming amount of affidavits, right? And then the Minister of Immigration, Keith Bell, came on and said that there's detected fraud, right? So even in the States, they have detected fraud as far as some of these documents being issued, passport, whatever, right? So me personally, being in the inner city, right, I talk with a lot of people. And the crux of the problem is immigration. And so for me to sit back as a 59-year-old man and say corruption or nefarious activities don't exist as far as issuing citizenship, issuing work permit, when I've just had someone tell me that someone is getting work permits while they're here in Nassau, when my Jamaican worker had to wait until he get his own. And also, a justice of the peace, right? Mr. Lang, it's only, I wouldn't say it's overwhelming, right? But I would be naive to conceive in my mind that no one has signed, all right, let's say hospital, but you know, like when you're born in the hospital, right, Mr. Lang, there's a record of that, right? You know, the birth record. You get the birth record, right? Because then you go to the registrar general office, right? And you register a child, right?
Right.
You know, but, when my old man died, he was on the police force for 30-something years, and I went to the registrar general office. They couldn't find his birth certificate. So that's a paper trail. You know, it doesn't say that it didn't exist, but obviously it might have been lost because everything is on a paper paradigm, right? A paper model. So what I'm saying is, there's no way someone could convince me today that some justice of peace haven't signed off on things nefariously, but I wouldn't say anything. See, there's plausible deniability in the fact that fraudulent documents could be forwarded to them and the government. And so if we
if some fraud has happened, do you throw a system away because some fraud have happened? Because now we should throw away the banking system, we should throw away the legal system.
Yeah, things could be implemented in order to suppress this type of activity. You understand? But we must remember the way our society is structured. You have the lawyers, the judges, and the people who throw the crumbs to give the justice of the peace. I know a lot of Haitian Bahamians with justice of the peace, and they go and they learn it. I had one just come out of my shop and tell me, that's what he's going to do. He's going to be the next this and that. So, I mean, come on, man, Mr. Lang, man. You're trying to tell me now that justice of the peace.
Hold on. Because the way you're setting up your narrative, I have not said one single time that there is not fraud.
I got you. But I didn't say you said that. But you're saying it's not.
What I am saying is it is occurring,
and it is obvious. It's obvious.
All right, bro. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Some immigration department because I have a story come from Asian guy.
I appreciate what immigration
officers did to him, Mr. Lang.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thanks. So we have another text here. The text says, I definitely agree to make sure people get speedy and authentic service. That can sign affidavits and let's get things, these people straight to live their lives. I'm all for people having all of their rights. If not a few persons that can verify this, have a board or a committee that is dedicated fully for a year just to deal with affidavits until the backlog is low. It is now a simple and easy problem to fix. We just need to commit resources to get it done. I support that. That makes sense to me. And again, calling me to say to me that I can't believe, nobody should believe that there isn't fraud in the system, and that doesn't have anything to do with the point I'm making. I'm saying is, if affidavits are frequently being falsified and no one is being prosecuted, you have either an inept or impotent system to deal with that. And in fact, how do you know they're fraudulent? If you know they're fraudulent, why aren't you prosecuting? All right, so I don't want to hear no talk about, oh, I met this one and the next one said, I understand that. That's anecdotal. My point is, if affidavits have become so untrustworthy, how is it nobody's being prosecuted for falsifying them? My God, is that difficult to understand? Right? That can't be difficult to understand. And if they are being falsified, tighten up the system to permit them to be more credible. Okay? And that's the only point I'm making. But let that rule apply to these folk who come under this Privy Council rule, as we say, and all the rest of us who are citizens under the same law as them. That's the only point I make. It's definitely when a child is born to a single woman, if the father's name is to be used, he has to sign the birth certificate. This then should affect those who didn't sign. True. So that's even a narrower group of people. A narrower group, right? That's the point that I'm making is, how big is this problem? Right? If you have your father's or mother's birth certificate, this isn't only about father, you know. I keep hearing everybody say father, right? But it isn't only about your father, it's about your father and your mother, right? But if you have proof of their citizenship, your father and your mother, this does not apply to you because you go and get your passport, right? As long as you have proof. So this only applies to people who don't have proof. That's all. And in the instances where, prior to now, where people didn't have proof of their parents' citizenship, what did we in this Commonwealth of the Bahamas do? What did we do? You know how many people running around with passport? We only got an affidavit sworn. Now the affidavit is reliable. I was in government for 20-something years, right? Non-consecutive, right? 10 years non-consecutive, but in politics for 20-something years. This country been independent from 1973. We've been using affidavits from 1973. If the issue was so pronounced, how come no administration proposed a change to it? None? None? Not FNM, not PLP, not Finlin, not Ingram, not Christie, not Minnis, not Davis, none. If it's that prevalent a problem, none of them, we still use an affidavit. All right, I'll stop. Stop. If it's a big problem, you should address a big problem. Think about what an affidavit is used for. Think about what an affidavit is used for. And we have a prevalent problem with it, and yet we have done nothing to address it. Okay. Anyways, if you are one of the rule of the Privy Council, don't wait, if you can, don't wait for people to get you your rights. All right? You press the system. You press it. You press the system. You go and make your application. And say, what did other people have to do who didn't have their birth certificate of their parents? What did they have to do prior to now? Huh? I'm sorry. What did they have to do? I was getting an affidavit. Okay, I will get an affidavit then. And then when they deny you the affidavit, go get a lawyer. Go get a lawyer and let the courts rule on it again. Go get a lawyer. That's what I say. Press for your rights. Don't wait for people then to give them to you. That's one of the challenges in our country. It is one of the things that will make Fred Smith, at a time in a less emotional, more rational Bahamas, regarded as one of the most fundamental protectors of rights in Bahamas. Fred Smith, Attorney Fred Smith, Casey, because he has been that person. My son likes to say to me, I am that person. He has been that person. We'll fight for your rights. Go press for your rights. That's what I say. Because if you wait on the wheels of sometimes government to turn for you, by its very nature, government bureaucracy is slow. And that's deliberate. It wants to slow things down to make people think and consider properly a lot of times. It's not just a matter of inefficiency. That may be part of it too. But do what you have to do. Press for your rights. You're listening to Z Live. I'm Shabab Abulang, your host. We'll be back after this break. The news break. I'm not afraid to take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm. Whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Live, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM on this beautiful day afternoon. If you want to give us a call, the numbers are 323-6232 or 325-4316. You can text us on 422-4796 or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. We are pretty much done with the immigration matter, but I do want to read this text. This text says, good afternoon, Mr. Lang. There's so much fraud out there. Depending on who you are, it's covered up. Some of the lawyers are just as crooked. There is so much corruption out there. So sad. Well, I hear you and I understand what you're saying. But insofar as affidavits are concerned, my only issue is, if it's that much, and we know it, nobody's being prosecuted, everything is being covered up, everything is being allowed to slide, everything, really, everything, just no problem, go right ahead, just keep sliding. I just don't understand it. So anyways, I had an opportunity to read the budget presentation by the Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister responsible for investments and aviation. And it's interesting, right? And, you know, I want to be careful here, honestly, because people could think you're coming down on folk, but there is a glaring, this is a glaring example of basically what is happening in the budget debate. So if you look at the budget, tourism is the new fiscal year, that's 2023-2024. It is proposed that the Ministry of Tourism, Investments and Aviation get $135 million essentially. $135 million. That is approximately $2.3 million more than it will get, that it is supposed to get in the current fiscal year. So tourism's budget is up in the next year. Sorry, by about $2 million. Okay, there is a new line item in tourism's budget of $8 million. $8 million. It was zero before, and that line is for the Civil Aviation Authority. And I am almost certain that that came from somewhere else and just was put in there. But in any event, that's there. Okay, new $8 million line item. There is in there, and I think I know where it came from. So now the operational expenses for the Airport Authority is down about $10.5 million. So I suspect maybe that $8 million is related to that, right? Because the operational expenses for the Airport Authority is down from $12.5 million to $2 million. Okay? public official staff gratuity is going to be up about $1 million this year, in the next fiscal year, sorry. $1 million in the next fiscal year. So I'm looking at the biggest item for you. Bahamas Air's subvention is down, not $2 million, but down approximately, down $2.7 million. It's going to be down $2.7 million. That's what is being suggested. So that subvention is down, right? In terms of consultancy services, tourism got $4.2 million this year. They are going to get $5 million next year. So that's up a little bit, but up nonetheless. All right. The health visa expenses is going to be totally obliterated. So there's no expenses related to that. So that program is going to be entirely disbanded. Marketing and promotion is going to be up about $2.4 million in the next fiscal budget. Advertising and public notices up about $2 million in the next budget. Computer software supplies and materials is going to be up about $700,000 in the next fiscal budget. All right? So, and then contract workers are going to have an increase from $11.8 million to about $12.6 million. So just about $800,000 increase is what it's going to have. So that's true. Now, all of that information I just gave you, I got from reading the Ministry of Tourism's head 67. None of that information is in the minister's budget contribution. None of it. None of it is in there. Those numbers are not talked about in there. Those numbers are not quoted in there. Those numbers are not described in there. The reasons for the movements and adjustments in those numbers are not basically in there. Okay, not really. Now, this reality from the Deputy Prime Minister and the Minister of Tourism, Aviation and Investments in Aviation, is not distinct from anybody else, because this is what is happening. Very few of the folk who are debating the budget, even on the opposition side, are debating the budget itself. The numbers of the budget is numbers. They're numbers. They're about numbers. They're about revenue. They're about expenditure. And people are not talking about the numbers. People are making grand statements about this budget is progressive. This budget is terrible. This budget is takes care of the poor. The budget doesn't take care of the poor. People are talking in these platitudes, in these qualitative descriptions, etc. Need the details of the numbers. We have a caller. Go ahead, caller. We're listening to you. Hi, go ahead, caller. Hi, go. Did we miss them? Okay, so not many people are talking about the budget, commenting on the numbers. Why is that? And again, this isn't unusual. This isn't unique to this current administration. It isn't unique to this current administration at all. This has been tended to be a trend. And even the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance hardly referred to the numbers in his budget communication. Hardly did. But the budget is about the Constitution requires the Minister of Finance to submit estimates of revenue and expenditure. And what is to be debated? The debate is about those estimates of revenue and expenditure. But how do you debate something that you are not referring to? is up $1 million. Why is that down $10 million? What is this new line item? Now, it is not unusual for them to go through that when they do head by head and line by line, but a minister is supposed to, expected to capture in their communications, in their debate, these realities of their numbers. Why? Because if the opposition does not have any questions in the line, head by head and line by line, you know what happens? The budget gets approved, and that's it. And you will know nothing about the movement of those numbers. Okay, as I just indicated. So you get an increase of $800,000 for consultancy services. Shouldn't you say why you're getting those increases? Can't you say, well, it's for this program or that program? If you're getting $800,000 for contract workers, shouldn't you say what that is going to be used for? If you have a substantial decrease in, if you have a $2.5 million decrease in subventions there, shouldn't you justify why such a decrease? Because let's be real, unless there are adjustments made in Bahamas Air's expenditure or revenue so that they are able to make up the $2.5 million, that subvention is going to be made anyways. But if you have a program that tells you this is why this is going to happen, then you can let folk know. Right? If you're going to have substantial increases, $2.5 million increases in advertising and public notices, what is that for? You can get ahead of the opposition. You could jump ahead of the opposition in providing information about these things in advance. But that's not what is happening. People are not talking about the numbers in the budget. There is an increase of $3.6 million in tourism's budget for operation of Grand Bahama International Airport. The current budget has zero, the budget before that had zero, the budget before that had zero, but now there's a expenditure increase. Why? Or what? Nobody said. The minister did not say. That's a substantial line item movement and increase. Nothing said. How come? And so this is the nature of the way we are having debates now about the budget. We're not really discussing the budget. And unfortunately for you, as citizens of the country, that means that you don't get the kind of details that would be helpful to you to really understand what is happening with your money. You won't. The reason why I can do it is because I'm going to go through these line items and I can see movements and then I may have some questions. But I read the budget speech by the minister, and he reported on some very good things happening. The tourism numbers are excellent. There's no question about that. Even the budget, though. Those are the budget numbers. He's reporting on increases in air travel, increases in cruise visit arrivals relative to the pandemic, relative to pre-pandemic era period, etc. Wonderful. There's no questioning that. Beautiful. Excellent. No one queries that. We know that the results are there and so forth. We got no numbers on investments. What are the investment flows now compared to last time? Forecasted for future, we have no numbers on those, right? But then we don't talk about the numbers in the budget. Okay? $135 million will be spent for tourism. And there's hardly a mention about the details of those numbers. Right? And I just simply think, again, I repeat, this is not new. This is not new. But I used to say it before too, and I say it again. The budget debate is about the numbers, the budget numbers. People get up in the House of Assembly on the government side, say, oh, they didn't do that. They did a lousy job when they were there. They didn't do this, they didn't do that, they didn't do the next thing. Fine, that's politics. I'm not complaining about that. The opposition gets up and says, well, they are undermining this or they're doing that in the next thing. And maybe talk about the numbers. That's where the story is. What about the numbers? See, each side should show that they have delved into the numbers, and they are debating the numbers. What is the debate about? The debate is about whether or not you believe the revenue forecasts are justifiable. And you can go item by item, head by head in the revenue section and say, well, I don't believe this number is I believe this is justifiable. And whether you can rationalize what the expenditure numbers are. That's what the debate is. That's the debate, folk. Well, you can use it as election time and just throw blows on people and so forth. And maybe that's what works. Maybe that gets it done. I don't know. I'm just saying. I'm reading. I could read it for you. I could read the contribution for you, and I could assure you. And you read the contribution. You go through the contribution. The contribution is mostly words. They're mostly words, not really describing, not really talking about. If you're given a budget, if you're a minister, and I'm only saying ideally what would be the case. I'm only saying from my point of view, ideally what would be the case. All right? If you're a minister and you're debating the budget, you should start off with the fiscal budget. My ministry will be given X sum of dollars. Of that amount, the department will get X, this will get that. These are the areas where major increases will occur in my budget next year, and these are the areas where major decreases will occur. Here are the reasons for the major increases. Here are the reasons for the major decreases. We believe that these movements will represent progress in this area, progress in that area, progress in the next area. These decreases are happening because we believe that we hadn't spent enough money, we were overfunded that last night, or that we have exhausted that program, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and so forth and so forth. And that's the budget debate. That's your debate. That's the numbers. That's the whole story. That's the story. But to not refer to the numbers, if you're the Minister of Finance, we're going to allocate X amount of dollars this year. We expect to receive X sums of dollars this year. These are the major areas in which we think changes or movements up or down will be made in revenue. These are the areas in which we think changes up or down will be made in expenditure. And these are the results we expect to obtain from this level of spending over the course of the next 12 months and so forth and so forth. That's the budget. That's the budget debate. I mean, that's the communication. No, we're really doing that these days. I mean, not no more. We're not really doing that. Anyway. We're going to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to C-Live. I'm Shivago, I'm your host. We'll be back after this break.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather, cold or warm. Let me know that you're not alone. Holla if you feel like you've been down the same road.
When faced with an illness like cancer, we band together, and we at Cleveland Clinic in Florida have your back. From advanced cancer treatments to extra safety measures at all of our locations, we're with you on this journey for every infusion and follow-up, for every step of the way, for every care in the world. Cleveland Clinic in Florida. Get the care you need when and where you need it. To learn more or connect with a local representative, visit clevelandclinic.org/Caribbean.
Have you taken a look at those investment options yet?
Too busy. Look at today. Workout, breakfast, drop kids at school, back-to-back meetings, dog from the groomer, nails, and that's all before 12. How come you're so chill?
That's because my money is as busy as you.
At RF, we find the best Bahamian and international investments to keep your money busy so you can spend more time focusing on you. Contact us at rfgroup.com to find out more. RF, money at work.
¶¶
Are you a parent looking to strengthen your family's bond and raise confident, resilient children? Look no further. Cleft of the Rock Foundation presents the Parenting on Purpose Weekend Retreat, June 30th to July 2nd. Immerse yourself in the serene beauty of Pelican Bay Resort in Freeport, the Bahamas. Picture yourself surrounded by turquoise waters and palm trees. It's the perfect setting for an unforgettable and transformative experience. From the renowned Dr. Bob Barnes, Parenting on Purpose is a comprehensive training program designed and strategies to raise happy, confident children. Dr. Barnes' expertise and passion for families will inspire and empower you. Register today at cleftoftherockfoundation.org or email cleftoftherockfoundation@gmail.com to secure your spot at this life-changing retreat. Limited spots are available, so don't miss out on this incredible opportunity. Join us for the Parenting on Purpose Weekend Retreat at Pelican Bay Resort in Freeport, the Bahamas. We're rebuilding the village, one family at a time.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Z Live. I'm Shivago Lang, your host. I'm so glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. Do we have a call on the line? Do we have a call on the line? No? Okay. I have a text here that says, again, I agree with you, laugh out loud. They spend so much time beating their chests and saying that my party did and how good their leader is and talking about religion that spend no time explaining these bills and their portfolios. I liked people like Greg Smith, Simonette, Reese, Chipman, McElpine get too caught up with kissing up to their leaders or keep talking about their own families. Amen. We hardly ever hear about the bills affect us now. Well, I mean, my basic assertion is that the debate is about the numbers. That's what it is. But see, if the debate is about the politics, right, where you are pumping up your party and pumping up your this and that, but you're not talking about the numbers, then there's no need for really a budget debate. See, if you are, this is you as a citizen. This should be your concern as a citizen. So I'm, please, I'm spending the time that I have doing this kind of thing. Teaching what I can, as best I can, to have a more enlightened society. That's what I'm doing. So however you read that, however people read that, that's really on them. I can't do anything about it. Maybe one day I get punished for what I do, or what I say, but okay, no problem, right? I'm not going to lie. I'm doing my best to be able to substantiate what I say, but I'm going to try my best to do that. So you as a citizen, this is what you should listen to the debate for. All right? So you have a pen, piece of paper, you should take notes. This is what you should do. Okay. You say to the minister, this is what you say. I hear you all have done X, Y, and Z. I hear you. But this is what you say to the minister. In this current year, so let's say you are dealing with the Ministry of Tourism. You say, last year, Mr. Ministry of Minister of Tourism last year. We, the Bahamian people, gave you $132,562,172 in allocation for your budget last year. As you come to present your debate to me, please tell me what you did with $132,562,172. I'm grateful to hear you say that tourism numbers are up. I'm grateful to hear you say that. But let's be clear. Tourism numbers were rising for years in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Let's be clear about that. We went from 1 million to 2 million to 3 million to 4 million to 5 million to 6 million to 7 million in 2019. So rise in tourism numbers isn't unique. It's not unique to this or any other minister of tourism. Okay? Let's be clear on that. And tourism numbers have had monumental increases in different periods of time. That's not new. Not new. So unless you can tie your increases to something in the budget monies I gave you this year, not entirely overwhelmed with the fact that tourism numbers are increasing, even though I'm delighted to hear it. Because this is a budget debate. So tell me what you did with $132,562,170. You could tell me, well, a substantial amount of that was for salaries and staff. So here's the amount for that. And much of it was for things we had been obligated to do from time past. So you will see if you go back budget after budget, we've had rents and this and that. So that's fine. Let me tell you what we did with that was new and different with some of the monies we got. And I want to hear that for the current year. Then tell me what is happening for the new next fiscal year. That's what you want to know. So I know what you've explained to me what you did with the $132 million that I gave you this year. Now tell me what you're going to do with the money for next fiscal year and where changes up or down are taking place with respect to those monies. That's a budget debate. That's an accountability for a budget provision. That is what you want to hear from those responsible for your financial resources. When they come to a budget, what are the bills that they are going to be debating? Those are called budget bills. Those are the budget bills. Those are the ones that actually provide the lawful authority for the spending of that money. Not that book that has the revenue of estimates and expenditure, estimates of revenue and expenditure. That's not what's going to pass in the House of Assembly and be give approval for the spending. That's a part of the supporting documentation. It's those bills, those money bills, we call them. So that is what you should be hearing. Now, no doubt, I don't have any doubt that there are some people who sit down home, you F&M, and you love when the F&M troll it on the PLP, and you're happy with that. There are some people who are PLPs who, when the PLP brag about what they're doing and show some licks on the F&M for what they're doing, you're happy about that? I have no doubt about that. That's politics. That's not a problem. But if you're going to have a budget debate, can we have a budget debate? Can you talk about the numbers? And these are not small numbers. These are not small numbers. According to the government, it is going to raise in the next budget 3.3 billion dollars. Let me put $3.3 billion in perspective for you. If you were dividing $3.3 billion between all the waking Bahamians in the Bahamas, all the waking ones, not the children, all the waking Bahamians, then you give each one $1,650. Not a lot of money. Not a lot of money, right? That's not a lot of money. But they are going to spend $3.3 billion. Raise it. And then the government's going to spend of that amount. $3.4 billion going to spend that amount of money. Right? A budget debate is an accounting about those dollars. Now, if you never read the budget book, the estimates of revenue expenditure, you will never know what is going on, because you will not know that, not from the budget debate. Because largely, the numbers are not discussed in the debate. They're not. And I listened to a number of the speakers. They're not dealing with them numbers. They thought, but this is a progressive budget. This is a great budget. Based on what? Make a case for your greatness of your budget. What's great about it? If it were me, I could say, listen, the speaker, Madam Speaker, we are making substantial progress in our fiscal circumstances. In this fiscal year, Madam Speaker, our GFS deficit will be on the order of 3.8%. We expect in the next budget year that to be below 1%. Madam Speaker, the last time we were below 1% was sometime in the 1990s. That is progress, Madam Speaker. What does that mean? That means, Madam Speaker, that the rate, that the level of deficit spending in the country is decreasing. And it means, Madam Speaker, that the rate of growth of the government debt is decreasing. That's good news for us. As a matter of fact, you understand, Madam Speaker, we shall have a budget surplus. Now, the Prime Minister alluded to that. That's just one set of discussions about these numbers. So you're making a case for it being a progressive budget, right? You talk about national security. Right? And that's been a theme that the government has highlighted. The government says, and the Minister of Tourism, Aviation, Investment in Aviation alluded to it. He spoke of this is a national security budget. The Prime Minister alluded to it as a national security budget. Okay. So let's look at the numbers and let's see what the numbers say about that priority. So let's look at national security. So if I tell you the budget is a national security budget, what would your expectations be in respect of national security? You might think, okay, maybe that means more money is going to be allocated for national security. Okay, well, let's look at it. Well, the Ministry of National Security itself, right? Now, that's just a ministry. That's not the departments. That's just a ministry. That ministry's budget is going to actually be down slightly. Okay? No problem there. They're down slightly. Okay, so let's go then to the police. Well, the police's number is going down slightly. Down. Okay, the police's number goes down from the Royal Bahamas Police Force goes down from $127 million to $126.5 million. Slightly. So no big movement there, So we go to Defense Force. Defense Force is up $2.6 million or thereabouts. Okay? So Defense Force up a bit. Immigration is up about $600,000. So if you look at all the national security areas, you would have to make a judgment. Well, the movements aren't all that big. So why is this a national security budget as compared to the last one? What would make this a national security budget? What would be the emphasis? What would be the thing in this that tells me we are focusing on national security? Because the biggest increases in this budget is in national security. Not even close. Right? That's an OPM. Right? And so forth. So when you are listening to the debate, you are listening for how the numbers mirror or align with the statements that are being made about the budget. You're listening to ZLive. I'm Shabbat Rulang, your host. We're going to take our final break. We'll be back after this break.
Why are you so sweaty?
Y'all are getting ready for the Bahamas Games.
Bahamas Games? What that is?
The games started in 1989 under the then Minister of Sports, Peter J. Bethel, and now Minister Mario Boleg.
When the games is?
This July 7th to the 15th.
For more info,
go to www.thebahamasgames.org
or call 322-1029.
My Gateway has marked a major milestone. Over 100,000 registered users worldwide can now enjoy secure access to over 60 government services online. There is much more to come because our digital transformation journey just keeps getting better. What are you waiting for? Sign up at mygateway.gov.bs today. My Gateway. Making government work for you.
Tired of paying too many bills and loan payments each month?
Shrink your monthly debt payments down to one easy payment with our debt consolidation loan.
It also has a built-in savings that pays you 5% interest.
Inquire about our debt consolidation loans today.
Call 356-7764.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
I'm not afraid to take a stand, take a stand. Everybody, everybody, come take my hand, come take my hand. We'll walk this road together through the storm, whatever weather.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to ZLive. I'm Shavar Rolang, your host. So glad you could join us here today on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM on this beautiful Monday afternoon. I wonder if y'all are... Am I making any sense here? I mean, do you understand what I'm trying to say to you, how I'm trying to guide you? This text is, I think each minister needs to submit their written reports to Parliament similar to that of the Prime Minister in advance of the budget debate. This should improve the debate. I find it nearly impossible to understand what is happening with each ministry by just reading the budget speech and looking over the numbers. It's actually exhausting. Then I find I only get some answers when the ministers speak. Well, here's the thing, though. There are lots of ministers who use written speeches in the debate, but the truth is the rules of the parliament, non-extensive speech reading. That's the rules. It's really, it's supposed to be a debate. So you're really supposed to, you can use notes. Some people even, to get away with breaking the rules, say, I'm using extensive notes. But the debate is not supposed to have, it's not supposed to be about speech reading. So there's really nothing to submit in advance. What is supposed to be true is that a minister, and lots of ministers do have speeches, mind you, don't get me wrong, but the debate is not supposed to be that. But again, it doesn't matter if the speech is even submitted in advance, because if the speech itself is not about the budget, then you still are no further ahead. Right. So if you got the DPM speech in advance, if you got the Prime Minister's communication in advance, and the Prime Minister doesn't give his communication in advance, actually, he gives it on the day at the beginning of the tabling of the budget debate, of the budget. Again, it does, if there's not a lot of discussion about the budget itself, the speech does not help you. And that's what I'm saying. The speech is not a lot about the numbers, so it doesn't help you. What you need is for the ministers and the MPs and the opposition to talk about the numbers. What do they observe? What do they think? What do they see in the numbers? And largely, if you're looking at a budget, comparing one budget to the next, you're looking for movement. That's what you're looking, up or down. Is a number increase? Is a number decrease? If the numbers increase, why? If the numbers decrease, why? What is the percentage increase? What's this percentage decrease? Is that a significant increase? Is that a significant decrease? And why? That's really what you're looking for. What is the programmatic thrust of a number that has been changed? If it is increased, what's the new program? Has it been decreased? What program has been cut? That's what the budget debate is supposed to be about. So, you know, that's really, for me, the basic challenge is it has to be about the numbers. Now, you're right. You can't get details about what the ministry is doing from the numbers outside of maybe a line item, travel has been decreased or increased. That is what the budget, that's what the minister should be doing. The minister should be explaining to you, when you look in the budget, you will see that, as did, for instance, Pia Glova. She did this. She said, you will notice that that the ministry has decreased contractual workers, Ministry of Public Service. And so she gave that number, that increase. That's how you do it. That's what you want to do, right? Now, there were some other numbers that I thought she should have also, but she didn't. But, I mean, she at least was alluding to the numbers in her budget, and that's what you do. And that helps your listeners to get a sense of what the ministry is doing. So if you listen to so far, how much do you know about the new Breakfast Reading Program? So when the Minister of Education speaks, if she hasn't already done so, I may have missed it. And you know, I can tell you one thing. If you listen to Venice Anna Martin, she's going to talk about the program she's doing. She is going to do that. Right? She is going to do that. Fred Mitchell as well will tend to speak to what his ministry is doing. Again, he doesn't allude to the numbers as much, you know, but he will speak about what his ministry is doing too. Right? I mean, broadly speaking, most ministers do, but I'm saying they're not connecting the dots in respect of their numbers relative to the programs that they are running. So what new programs are there? Do you know? What new projects are there? Do you know? What is the cost of that program, the project? You don't know. Why? Because the details aren't being given. And this is the job then of the opposition. The opposition should peel away at the numbers. Be able to pierce those numbers and go, okay, but why this? Why that? Why the next thing? Why would a line item go up $1? $1? if an opposition wants to be really tactical and tedious during the head by head, oh man, that's when the devil comes out. Details. This text says, and the thing that I was counting on getting the cliff notes from Tina too. I didn't get no cliff notes. I think that you know, honestly, largely we do what we think our audience either wants or will allow us to get away with. We do what we either want to do or what we think our audience will get away with. So the extent to which the public is not so much engaged in the budget, and there could be many reasons why the public is not as engaged, because, you know, if you thought the budget was really relevant, really, really relevant to yourself, then you might be more engaged. Clearly, for instance, when you hear about, they're now saying that they need to slow down, the cruise people are saying slow down with the passenger tax because the notice was too short. Why? Because they have an interest in that particular area. So maybe you don't have an interest in the whole budget, and maybe nobody does. Some lots of parts of the budget are really just really mundane. But maybe there are particular parts that concern you. Maybe parts of education concern you. Maybe parts of national security concern you. Maybe parts of immigration. And you just focus on those parts. And you ask for as much detail as you could get in those parts. And let other people who have interest in other parts ask their questions. And if enough of that is done, you can get more enlightenment about the budget than not. And so it becomes a grand opportunity. The whole budget exercise is a grand opportunity to awaken the public to the conduct of the, see, because remember now, the government can talk all it wants about what it's doing, any government, I'm talking about the Davis administration, the minister, the Penn Ingram, the Christie, anyone can talk about what they're doing. It really is the money that speaks to what you can do. Right? you can tell the people in Exome, you can build them a dock all you want. You don't put no money in the budget for the dock. It won't matter. You can tell the people in Smith's Point, you build them a brand new primary school all you want. Allocated in the budget for it, then you know exactly what's going to happen. And so what those numbers are an opportunity to fully understand what is going on and actually going to be done or sought to be done by the government. Why? Because the numbers speak for themselves. Right? But again, I do not expect the large numbers of the Danish population will be bothered with this. They will not be. People are hustling, trying to make their living, trying to pay their bills, trying to have a good time, trying to relieve their stress, trying to take care of the diabetes they got, and stuff like that. And so lots of people, this will not be an issue for. But for those people who have an interest, and there are lots of people who do have an interest, there is a way to approach it in such a way that your interests can be more fully appreciated. And I want to try to help with that appreciation to the extent possible. Right? All right. If you want to give us a call, please feel free to do so on 323-6232. 323-6232 or 325-4316 in these last remaining moments, or you can text me on 422-4796, or you can WhatsApp me on 439-3043. Y'all remember about debating whether or not there was any new taxes proposed in the budget because the prime minister says there was no increases in taxes. Y'all remember that? You remember that? Okay, well, if you wanted proof that some people thought the taxes were raised, there's a story in the Tribune. Says cruise lines are pushing the Davis administration to postpone the implementation of new passenger tax increases. Let me read it for you again. Cruise lines are pushing the Davis administration to postpone the implementation of new passenger tax increases, arguing they were not notified early enough to prepare for the rise. The passenger tax amendment bill will require cruise passengers leaving by Nassau and Freeport to pay $23 up from $18. Those exiting the sea from a private island without visiting any other port in the country would pay $25. What are those? Incorrect tax increases. The legislation says the amendment will take effect July 1, 2023, the start of the new fiscal year. Another new fee. They call it a new fee. A nonsense. Not a new fee. It's a tax. It's in the Passenger Tax Act. It's the same as the ones that they said were increasing. A tourism enhancement levy of $2. That's a tax. There's a new tax called the Tourism Development Levy. And there are increases in taxes in this new budget. That's what's being proposed. I don't argue the government with that. I don't get mad with the government for that. I'm just saying, it's a new tax and it's increases in taxes. That's reality. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, again, I'm so happy you were able to join us today. Listen, y'all, I'm happy you were able to join us tomorrow. God spares life. We'll be back. You've been listening to Z Live. I'm Shibago Lang, your host. Take care.
Live Off the Record with Shivago Lang is brought to you by Burger King, Cleft of the Rock Foundation, the Cleveland Clinic, the Digital Transformation Unit, the Insurance Commission of the Bahamas, RF Bank and Trust, and Raw Star Assurance.